everybody.
Hello, Salvador. We're going to say Salvador. So we'll let everybody know it's Salvador Perez, Jr. He wants to go by Salvador. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
All right. So we're all ready to go, and we will start with, we'll begin with your childhood, okay? Can you share with us where you were born and raised?
I was born and raised in a small town outside of Fresno, California called Reedley. And I left there very early to go to design school in Los Angeles, so I really consider myself a Los Angelino.
All right. I have tons of relatives in Fresno, and I've never heard of that town.
It's a little tip.
Very little town, it must be. Something like Taft or something.
Exactly.
Or Wasco or, you know. Okay, so you said you went off to designing school, so here's one of my questions for you. Was designing costumes a childhood dream, or did you have other dreams as a child of what you wanted to do when you grew up?
I always knew I wanted to do fashion, and so I really went to design school thinking I would be Calvin Klein and have a fashion line. But I had a great counselor in high school, and she made me take 4 years of high school sewing. So by the time I got to college, I was a proficient sewer. So everybody at design school was learning how to thread a needle, and I had finished my first garment. So I sort of got bored of design school and started working retail and met a costume designer who needed somebody to sew, and the rest is history.
So what kind of skills and training were involved to do what you do now, to become a costume designer? Like, what kind of classes besides sewing did you take?
Well, I mean, you take design classes in college, but I really feel that it's either in you or it's not. I mean, college can perfect what you have in you. It can't teach you how to design. And I really worked my way up. I started as a sewer, sewing in a workroom, running the workrooms, and then became assistant costume designer, and I worked my way up to designer. So I can build anything. And I mean, costume-wise, I can make anything, and I have.
On your own, right? In your own, you're like sewing room, your design studio.
Exactly. I mean, I ran the workrooms for like Titanic and Stargate and Brady Bunch and the Flintstones. And I mean, I've built costumes for movies for so many years before I started design.
Cool. I didn't know that about you.
It's
not
Adam.
On your IMDb.
Yeah, it is, actually. It is.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I sent that all to Cheryl, and I didn't see any of that. So you did set design as well as...
No.
Go ahead.
No, I say costume construction because as far as I'm concerned, we build costumes.
Right,
we don't sew costumes, we build them. So the title in the union is Costume Manufacturing Foreman. So it's just sort of, it's not just sewing costumes, it's building them.
Building them from the floor up. So that's your passion. So when did you find out you had that passion? About how old were you?
I have to say, it sounds really dorky, but it was one of my earliest memories. Like, I remember in the first grade, we had a project to do mobiles, and everybody was doing boats and fish, and I did brides.
Great.
So it's like I've always been fashion-oriented. And mind you, I was from a small farm town, so my family was like, what is that kid doing? Yeah, they had no idea what I was talking about.
You know, let's design the farmer's overalls, you know?
Exactly.
Let's decorate the tractors. Okay.
Exactly.
It's been said, before an actor says his first line, the clothing he wears speaks for him, which is why the costume is so important. Can you explain this concept to our audience? Why is the costume so important to the performer?
I mean, I think it's the first visual you get. When they walk in the room, you have to know so much about them, you know, where they're from, their socioeconomic status, who they are, their personality. And it is from that first costume you see on them. I'm going back to the era of silent movies, you couldn't hear what they were saying. You had to know who they were by what they were wearing. And even now, I mean, it's, you know, I always tell people, without costumes, it's boring, sexless porn. I mean, it's just naked people walking around without a costume to tell you who the characters are.
Perfect.
Right. So Lillian Gish and Buster Keaton and Rudolph Valentino, if they would have ran around nude, we wouldn't have recognized what they were.
We wouldn't know who they were at all. No.
And, you know, Greta Garbo. Okay. When preparing for production, is reading the script the first thing that you do? Can you give an illustration of how a script might inspire you in terms of how to design for a particular character?
It's very funny because everybody thinks they're a costume designer. And if you read most scripts, when it describes a dress, it's always red or it's lamé. I've been doing this for 20 years. And she always walks in a red dress. Because they can't, you know, it's like, well, I understand what you're trying to portray. You want it to be bold and dynamic, but let's do another color. Let's, you know, or, but literally, it's so funny because writers will just fill in whatever they know. And then it's my idea to be like, no, no, that's just writers pretending, and I'll tell you what they're wearing. Because it tells you a bit about the character, but we as costume designers sort of visualize the character by their clothes. Like, if they're wearing a white shirt, is it a beautifully tailored white shirt from Neiman Marcus? Or is it a comfortable one from Target? And the way that shirt, white shirt fits tells you volumes about the character.
Uh-huh. So, okay, I read an account when a designer was trying to plan a costume for a character who was described as mysterious, kind of shady, a little lazy, and a braggart. She designed a suit which was a little too big for the character, but very neatly pressed, dark to illustrate the nature of the character. According to what I read, a costume designer works with not only the actor they are designing for, but also the director and producer. Can you explain a little bit about why, about what way they all interrelate to each other? You work with the producer, right? When you just, you're in the end, the, you know, for the character?
Well, it sort of varies. On a feature film, the director really tries to have the final say because it's his vision, as opposed to a TV show, which is ongoing and the director is a guest. The producers have the vision. So on Castle, I met with the show creator, Andrew Marlowe, and they had done a 30-minute presentation of the show in New York, and they hated working in New York, so they decided to bring the show back to L.A. So they brought me in I had worked with Howard Grigsby and Laurie Zaks before, so they brought me in, and they had me sit in a private room because there was no place to see them. They didn't want to let the tape out. They had me watch the 30 minutes they had shot and then had me read a script. And I'm a pretty bold person, and I don't really hold back. So he's like, what do you think? And I'm like, do you want me to be honest, or do you want me to be politically correct? He's like, no, be honest. And I'm like, if you want a designer to put a police detective in spread collar shirts and suits, I'm not the guy. And Castle looks poor. And he sort of laughed and said, exactly, we feel the same way. And so then I gave him my pitch on the characters, which they ultimately hired me for to do. And it was really because Andrew Marlowe, as a show creator, had a vision, but they can't always articulate it, even in pen. So it's easier for somebody who can talk clothes. I mean, I talked silhouettes and colors with them, and I had various ideas. But then all of that's great until you have the actor. And what Stana brought to the show, I mean, she's a 5'9" model. I mean, you could put anything on her. So my challenge was to make her believable as a police detective, but still stylish enough that people want to watch you on television. If I dress people the way a real detective would dress in New York, you wouldn't want to watch that show because it would be visually boring.
True. Very true.
So go ahead.
As I said, I met Stana for the first time and the fragrance counter at Saks Fifth Avenue. As opposed to me trying to take the world to her, I'm like, spend the day with me shopping. So we met at Saks and we did the entire store and we came across that long green Diane von Furstenberg leather coat, and we both went Serpico, and it was exactly the inspiration for the character. Like, she was the modern female version of Serpico. There was an edge to her. She was cool. She was sleek, and it sort of became the starting point for Beckett, and it ended up being Officer Prada. I mean, she was a police officer, but it was chic. It was stylish. There were no, you will never see me in a spread collar blouse over a blazer ever. It was denim because she had to be able to be active. I loved her in other jackets. You know, it was basics, like all those little T-shirts and turtlenecks first year, Jill Sonder. But they fit beautifully. The colors were amazing.
Right.
And you believe the character.
I love the outfits from season 1 and 2. Very much so. So what was necessary? What is necessary for a good relationship between the designer, the actor, and the producer? Do you all go in together and pitch what you want each character to wear, such as Beckett, Castle, Ryan?
I mean, I have a sit-down with the producers and discuss each character. And then I'm a stickler to the character because I don't believe that in real life people are that diverse. I mean, I think that when you have a style of dress, you sort of maintain that world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the characters are sort of written very specifically. And in my fittings, I mean, Esposito, John Huerta, just wore suits beautifully. He was so sexy in a suit. And I said, that's the guy you're going to be. You're always dressed. I think that, it, you know, because they all, of course, wanted to wear jeans. And I'm like, no. This is New York City. It's not L.A. It's not Malibu PD. Denim is very Los Angeles. So I didn't let Esposito and Ryan, much to their dismay, wear denim because Castle and Beckett wore so often. So I put Esposito in suits and blazers and sports coats. And Ryan, I made him a little quirky. And it was the same thing. Like, Ryan wears clothes beautifully in real life. Seamus. But I made his clothes a little, like, they weren't as fitted. And they were just, the jacket sleeves were a little too long. Because it's that guy who doesn't know
how to dress.
As opposed to John Huertas, whose clothes were impeccably tailored to him. Because he was that kind of a guy who put that detail into it. And I was really strict with my characters. Like, no, this is your closet. This is the world you live in. And every now and then, Seamus would come in with some fabulous coat from Europe that he bought. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. Seamus gets to wear it, not Ryan.
And you stuck by it, which is really good, and didn't let it get away with it.
Exactly. I mean, because I think they also trusted me. And that being the operative word is that there's a trust. The producer trusted that he knew that I was going to give them a great look. And the actors knew that no matter what, they always look great on camera. And if they have that trust, they let you do your job.
So what is the thing you most enjoy about costume designing and the least, be it TV, film?
Oh, gosh. I love creating the characters. I mean, it's just to be able to a character is written in a paragraph in a script. It tells you their age, their background, it tells you a very brief description of them, and then I get to bring that character to life. When I did Veronica Mars, I mean, she was supposed to be a character, this girl from the wrong side of the tracks in San Diego. And I will say this with pride, I think that her character was cool because I made her dress cool. She wasn't written as cool as she dressed. And the character is such an iconic character because she always looked great. And we took a lot of license on that show. She was supposed to be, her dad was an out-of-work private detective. They lived in a little apartment. She changed 15 to 20 times an episode and never repeated an outfit. But nobody noticed that because it all was made to look real.
Now,
likewise,
go ahead. I keep interrupting you.
I was going to say, even Beckett would not probably have a $2,000 leather jacket on. But
no.
The audiences know that, and it doesn't look great.
Well,
and we used it over and over again.
Did you sketch it out, your characters, in your mind, or you put this all on paper, on computer, your laptop?
I usually do tear sheets so that I can show colors and silhouettes because it's, on a contemporary show, they're not going to want to have we don't have the time for illustrations unless we're making something. But as a general rule, it's tear sheets.
All right. Cheryl, you wanting to say something? I keep hearing you going up, up.
No, I just wanted to say I'm one of those people who, regardless of the fact that her character may not have in real life worn something like it, I loved all the leather jackets. Those were – I remember during Tick, 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 I was like, I hope they saved the jacket.
when her apartment blew up and her clothes.
Like, hopefully they were like in storage somewhere and they weren't in her apartment and they were all saved.
That happened after I left, and I think the new costume designer was a good glad to get rid of all of my clothes.
Well, that was his way of doing that, huh? So they can start own trend from when you leave.
Exactly.
When one designer leaves, they go back and say, okay, let's blow up the apartment.
Right. I'm sure that they ceded that idea to the writer.
Oh, geez. So are you aware of costumes, even when you're watching a movie or TV show, just for yourself? Are you aware of, like, well, I could have did that better, or this guy should have really dressed this guy like that, or I would have done this differently? Or do you even care when you're watching something that's not your own work?
I mean, I think we, as costume designers, we sort of live for clothes. I mean, I'm not saying fashion because it's a completely different thing. But I will watch a show and think, wow, they did a great job. I wouldn't have thought of that. Or there have been times like, what were they thinking? So I think, as people who dress people for a living, we are very critical. Hopefully most of the times we keep it to ourselves.
So in you're designing for yourself, for when you're away from all the movie stuff. Do you keep up with what's going on out there in the fashion trend? Like, what's popular for 2011? What's coming up for 2012 for any thing you're going to do later on another, television show that's contemporary, or do you keep up with the fashion trends that interest you most out there?
You have to sort of stay current, especially in television, because you shoot that, and within 8 weeks it's on television, so you have a little more instant response to it, as opposed to a film. You don't want to look at a film and think, oh, that was made in 2003, and so I try to be a little more neutral on a feature. Because hopefully it'll air for, hundreds of years. I mean, so you treat them a little differently. But you're definitely aware of what's in that. Because especially because I'm in the store, what you guys do the week of Christmas, I do every single day of my life. I'm in the store every single day, at least 5 to 6 hours a day, if not more. So I see everything, and I see what sells and what doesn't sell. And it's also like I can watch other shows. Like, oh, they were at Target. Oh, they were at Theory. I can recognize the folks because I've been to the store. Exactly.
They were at Macy's. They were at the thrift store. No. So what motivates you in fashion and design? Do you try to convey the theme of a design in the clothes that you design, or do you strictly go with the script and the character?
Obviously, we stick to the character because it's really our job as costume designers is to maintain the integrity of that character. I mean, you can try to have a little fun every now and then, but it's like, for instance, when we did the episode of Castle where he buys her the gown to go to the ball, I had two things. I had to make Stana look great, which is easy, but I had to make a dress that she wouldn't have bought for herself and that a man would have bought for her. So it wasn't like, oh, this is about a dress. We found Barachi in Beverly Hills. Aria, who was the owner, and his wife Jill, they're amazing. And Stana, God bless her, because we made that dress over Christmas break. She came on a Christmas break for 3 fittings to get that dress to fit that way.
Oh.
So she got, we had it made from ways. It didn't move for dancing, so we added ruffles, and we got to build that dress from the ground up so that it worked for the scene. And it was a little more girly than I think if Beckett were to buy a dress, it wouldn't be the dress she would have bought, but it's exactly the kind of dress that Castle would have bought for a woman.
Now, when she was on vacation, you're lucky she wasn't in Europe.
I was very lucky. I mean, like I said, I had a conversation with her, and she, she really loved to have input into the clothes. And so I said, I'm going to need you. What are you doing for Christmas? She's like, well, I was thinking of going home. I'm like, when are you leaving? And so we fit, but she was there for the fittings. It was a godsend because that dress wouldn't have fit that way without all the fittings.
Okay, so what one piece of advice would you give to someone wanting to start a career in fashion?
Change your mind. No.
No,
I'm sarcastic. It's funny. It's like people ask, how'd you get in? I'm like, I don't know. How do you get out? I mean, I fell into the film business. I think fashion is much more difficult than film in different ways because you're really at the mercy of the public. And with film, it's like I don't have to deal with the public. I'm dealing with a producer, an actor. It's much more insulated, and I'm dressing a character. So having to try to please the public in the fashion industry, I don't really know how to do it anymore. But I guess the one piece of advice is that you need to know your craft. I think the reason I'm a good costume designer is because if I need to have something made or if I have to have an alteration done, I can do it myself. So I know when I look at a jacket, what's wrong with it, and I can have it fixed because I know how to do it. Mind you, I might not have the time to do it anymore, but I understand the craft of it, so it makes my job much easier. If the jacket's wrong, wait, let me fix it, as opposed to find another jacket.
So that kind of leads me into one of the questions I had, Salvador, is what are your thoughts on all these like runway type of shows where they give these people bizarre design requests and on the spur of the moment they have to come up with something? What are your thoughts on those kind of shows? They do one, I think, on clothing and also one on accessories. There's like 4 of them out there, I believe.
Right, but I think they're kind of funny because their challenges are my Mondays. I mean, it's like, it took you 3 days and you couldn't make a dress? Come on, I made a dress overnight. I watch those shows with sort of like shock and awe, like, oh, come on, you guys. If you can't make that dress 3 days, and I've been in Wilmington, North Carolina, having to do a sci-fi movie and trying to find product to make a dress that's made out of aluminum at the Piggly Wiggly. So, those shows I think are very funny. None of the projects on those shows really relate to fashion. So it's a competition that does.
Okay.
That's
yeah,
a whole other show.
Now, Salvador, I don't know how to sew to save my life. I could not do it in school. I have no patience. Anybody who can sew, it's so hard to, get the patterns and everything straight and the seams and everything. But what is the best perk in being a designer for you?
Oh, God, there's
over
so
your 20
many.
Years?
Yeah, I don't know, the 300 dresses I have in my closet. I mean, I'm always shopping. I never buy retail because it's always going to go on sale. Always, always, always.
No, that's funny.
But unlike you or, the average person, I go to the store every day. So I'm like, oh, sure, it's still there. Oh, it's on sale 20% off. Oh, wait, on sale 40% off. And then when it's on 75%, that's when I buy it. That's the biggest perk, the patience to buy clothes, not retail.
Now, what's so funny about that is Never Buy Retail was episode 6, season 1, and you actually dressed Donna and those guys for that episode called Never Buy Retail. Got the knockoff purses, remember?
Right. Which, and then finding those knockoff purses fell on me, of course, because normally that's prop, but I didn't like the prop thing, so I pulled them.
So what did you have to do for those, remember, hedge fund homeboys, and you had to make these little uniforms, and they had to have insignia on all of them? Did you just make one up, or did you have to go kind of research how to do a bunch of uniforms?
We went to the show is an ABC show, so Disney had a big stock. So we went to go find what we could find lots of and then, added to it. That was sort of a dream, is having the access to, you know, when a show ends or at the end of a season, all the clothes go into the warehouse at the studios. So there's massive things available to you. Of course, the studio thought that I was going to find the perfect red dress for Stana, which that didn't happen. But like when we did the Halloween episode, I made, you know, Castle's outfit and all my principals, but all the background stuff was all from Disney stock, from old movies that I worked on years ago.
Great stuff. That's the Vampire Weekend, right?
Second season, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so talking about Castle, we're now at our Castle questions because we're moving through here fast because we've got about a half hour left with you. Goes by fast. How did you get involved with Castle? You began at the pilot, and how involved was Andrew Marlowe and Rob with the attire for the very first episode of Castle?
They did the presentation, and they sort of wanted a different direction. And, again, different designers had different takes on things. So I just gave her something that hadn't been seen before. And Rob and Andrew, you know, they every outfit is photographed on them or on a hanger and shown to them for approval. So they saw things.
So they were pretty much, they said what they wanted, you told them what you wanted, and then you went with it, and you have the people underneath you, and you just went for it from the very first episode and built their attire. Correct.
Right, you sort of shop wildly, and then you give them different versions, like you give them nine different versions of a suit, show them the photos, they're like, well, we like these styles of suits, so then you just keep getting more of that. And then I would try to bring the actors, especially if it was like the Esposito and Ryan, I would try to build closets for them where they had, you know, 15 suits, and I would change shirts and ties, and, you know, you'd put the 3 or 4 suits an episode, so with 15 suits, I could get through 3 episodes and then start repeating again. Now, with Nathan Fillion playing Castle, he was the millionaire playboy. And, you know, he's sort of a linebacker kind of a guy. He's a big guy, and I wanted clothes to fit impeccably. So we were buying Dolce & Gabbana jackets for $3,000 and recutting them. And finally, it was easier to just have everything custom made. Then I chose the fabric. It fit beautifully. I can get as many as I want. But we would order, you know, 50 sparse clothes at a time, 200 dress shirts at a time, so that I could go 6 months and not have to worry about him.
His suits look so nice in the first couple of seasons. I loved his pinstripe suits, and everything was very tailored to his body, you know, and in later seasons, it's not so tailored anymore. So I miss that real sharpness of him being wealthy and showing his wealth. It's kind of loosened up a little bit. But how important was your use of color and texture on Castle, particularly with regards to Castle and Beckett's moods and personalities? Like if you made her wear a lot of reds and him say purples, and were the colors to go with their moods, or what looked well on what looked best on Castle or Stana and Nathan? I mean
it's sort of a mixture of both. I mean, obviously if it was a solemn scene, I would try to keep the colors a little more solemn, and we always wanted them to have a contrast color, and so he wore so much blue. Although Stana looks great in blue, he wore it so well that we would not put much blue on her, and vice versa. If she was wearing blue, he couldn't be in it. And it also has a lot to do with the set. I mean, what set are they going to be on? If it was in the precinct, it was, you know, all that sort of greenish walls, and his home was sort of dark wood, so you wanted there to always be a contrast. So, of course, the trick is when he's on the street, in the precinct, and at home in the same outfit, you're like, ah.
Okay. Well, you know, with this being Stana Talk Radio, I have so many questions, but I'm kind of skipping over stuff because I know we have people that want to ask questions too. We're dressing Stana now. We're dressing Kate Beckett. How about Kate Beckett? Did you want her to be feminine yet strong with her wardrobe, since she was an NYPD detective? So in saying, you kind of answered this earlier on, that you said, you know, she had to look realistic as a cop, but you also wanted her to be able to wear some nice clothes. So in dressing Stana, did she have a say? Would she sit down with you and say, here's the kind of shoes I want to wear for Beckett, or did you do everything? in those early stages?
At the beginning, you know, she was fairly open to the character. I mean, we sort of agreed that she never wanted to wear spread collar shirts and jackets. And being that she was a woman in essentially a man's world, I couldn't make her too girly because the men wouldn't take her serious. You had to believe that she respected, she commanded authority and respect. So we gave her touches of femininity. You know, clothes were very fitted to the body, but she was covered. There was never cleavage. There was never short skirts because she had to be a strong, powerful woman in a man's world. We had a little fun in there, and that was why it was great. Like on the times that we'd see her at home or when she went to the ball, I mean, they even wrote her to the thing where the guys were like, wow, Sana's got legs. You know, because they were so used to seeing her in her sort of, you know, work uniform that it was great. That's the one thing that Sana always loved when it was a scene of her at home or on her day off or something. We could do the softer colors and the sort of slouchy sweaters that were more feminine because she was in her own time.
So how long would it take you to create and find and fit one outfit for Beckett?
I mean, we sort of power did it. Like we would have like, you know, 2-hour fittings where we tried on 3 or 4 racks of clothes. So we had a lot of pieces that fit her. And then each episode I would pull the rack and pull her changes out of the pieces I knew that fit her. So I would mix and match. And again, the characters are so ingrained in my head that I do it very quickly. Like I pull my entire line a day before we shoot the episode. And that way I have time to deal with the day players. So my characters have a huge, massive closets. That were, you know, everything was tailored and ready to go. We didn't have to touch them so that, because sometimes there are 30 guest stars. I mean, we would have a wedding. We would have costume balls. We would have fashion shows. So I had to have my principal actors designed and pulled aside so that I had time to deal with the day players who I was getting at least 2 or 3 a day every day.
That's why I was going to ask you, how many costumes for Stana did you actually design or buy for one season? And you pretty much answered a lot.
I mean, we had a big chunk of money as what they call the amort. So you get to amortize it over the whole season. And then you have an episodic budget. And so you built her closets, all of their closets with the amort money, and then you filled in with the episodic money.
So did you design any of Stana's contemporary clothing outside of Castle? Did she ever ask you to design something for a personal appearance that she had to do for ABC, or you pretty much stuck with her character?
Every now and then, you know, I remember there was when we were doing that episode with the red dress, I had pulled a few pieces just off the rack, which none of them really worked for the character. And then she was going to the premiere of a movie, and they had sent a stylist with a bunch of dresses that she just didn't like. And I passed by her tailor, and I saw her sort of panicking. What's going on? And she's like, I don't like my dresses. I'm like, hold on. And I came back with this fabulous burgundy Monique Lhuillier sequin 40s gown that was spectacular that she walked into and slipped it on, threw on her shoes, and ran off to the premiere. And then we actually used that again for a commercial that we shot for the Oscars for Castle. So, whenever I could help out, I could at a personal life. Those first couple of seasons, they didn't have personal lives. I mean, they work 18 hours a day.
They still don't, really.
Right. They don't really
or
have personal
either.
Lives.
Or you either.
Right. No, I work 7 days a week. Yeah. The only way to do it is to get caught up.
So what character on Castle was the most fun to dress, the easiest to dress, and the most challenging to dress character-wise?
Well, the easiest was Nathan Fillion because he just trusted me and left me alone. And he has, you know, his problems were so huge. But the funnest had to, I think, been Susan Sullivan, who played Martha.
Right.
That character, Martha was sort of kooky and zany and Broadway. And Susan Sullivan is not that character at all. And it took us a few episodes to get on the same plane because Susan was like, well, I would never wear that. And I'm like, well, you're not, Martha. And but the highest compliment I got was that after a few episodes, she was like, ooh, can I have one of these glasses for myself? So like the leopard and all that kind of fun stuff she totally got into. And I love it. I think it was just we were all trying to figure out the character, and she was just fun. Like, you know, there was always gobs of jewelry, and the colors were bright, and she had a pink coat with gloves and the zebra coat, and it was just a fun character to do compared to all the staid sort of detectives. Martha was the fun, as was Alexis, who, you know, it was sort of she was put together but still, you know, young.
Well, Susan's been on our show twice. She was just on here a couple of weeks ago, and we just love her. She can tell the most fun stories. So you were so lucky to get to dress her.
I agree.
She's fun.
She was a lot of fun and just a great person. A legend. I mean,
classy and sweet and just really charming and fun to talk to. So I'm sure you guys had a lot of giggles in there in those designing rooms. Now, who was your most challenging? Ryan?
No, I mean, the quantity of clothes was a challenge because, I mean, we did a feature film in 8 days. Literally, what would take, you know, it's an hour of television. We shoot that in 8 days. A feature film is 2 hours generally, and you shoot that for 10 weeks. So it was what the challenge on those things is being very prepared. We would get the synopsis about two episodes before it ran, and then we get the episode about 10 days before the episode. So then we'd have 8 days to prep it. So we were shooting an episode, and the day we started shooting an episode, we would start prepping the next one. So that in television is your biggest challenge because you never get a break. You never get a day off.
Did you also have to dress the victims before they
everybody.
Were?
Everybody. Every single person on that show.
Did you kind of put less expensive clothes on a victim? I'm just kidding.
Well, no, I mean, that was the issue. Is like, you know, it was they rarely killed a homeless person. It was always some society matron who was killed in her closet with her, you know, pajamas on. And, of course, you need three or four of them. And there was always that, how are we killing him this time? Like, the woman who was frozen, I had to design a costume that we could freeze the fabric. So it came up to me to figure out how to make the fabric look frozen. I'm like, well, how does fabric freeze? So you do all kinds of weird things. Like, you know, my maid was like, Mr. Stell, why is there wet fabric in the freezer? It's like, I'm doing an experiment. Leave me alone. We wanted to know what would happen. So then once you see what it looks like for real, how do we make that happen so that it holds up for camera? Because you can't really freeze it. It's got to look frozen. So those are always challenges. Like, you know, how do you cheat something for special effects?
You would never think of that watching it. How would you? You know, you got to make this lady look like she's dead. She's laying there on that slab there in the construction site, and she has to have her clothes look frozen.
Right.
That's funny. So what's the hard? Is it easier to dress men or women on a show? Does it matter?
Sadly, for men, there are fewer options. You know, you get a blazer, you get a shirt. You get a polo shirt, you get jeans, you get pants.
Hi.
You know, with a woman, it's like there's so many more ways to go with it. And again, since the majority of the characters on the show were police detectives, that was sort of what it was. And so we tried to have a little fun with the characters. Like when we did the episode with the call girl, the episode with the music singer, it was sort of like that's when you got to have a little bit of fun.
So what was a typical, take us through a typical day of Salvador arriving at the set, what you did from the moment you arrived to when you left that night. Tell us what you did.
No, it depends. I mean, normally we get there early, probably like 6 in the morning. I would check on the trailer that everybody had all of their clothes for their character, because we have a call sheet, and it tells you what scenes we're shooting in what order. So I will have laid out the clothes in advance. I will go check in with my costumers. Do you have everything? Do you have the belt? Do you have the shoes? Do you have the earrings? Do you have two of those earrings if you lose one? Check that out in the morning. Try to be there whenever an outfit was established. In other words, the first time they film an outfit, I would try to be there. In television, once it's established, it's going to be on for a couple of days, so I didn't have to be there all day long. But I tried to always be on set in case somebody, you know, like the belt doesn't work or they walk in and they weren't supposed to walk in. Now they leave and they want a coat. Well, let's add a coat to it. So you're just there for that. And so I would, most of my day was running back from the set to the mall and back because we had so much to buy, but I tried to be on set as much as possible, which is why a lot of the times I would spend my weekends shopping just because it was the time that nobody would bother me and I had to run back to set. Because I could be like, well, I'm here at 8 in the morning. We should establish that by 10. I can be at the mall by 11. And sure enough, you wouldn't establish it until noon and you can get to the mall till 2.
So how many hours of sleep per night did you used to get on the set? 6, 4?
If I was lucky to get 6 hours, that was a lot.
So what was your most favorite thing that you've ever made for Castle or any film production you've ever been on? Something you just love that you made and said, man, that was really good. I should patent this.
I did a comedy called The Comebacks, and they needed a bra that was a football. And I think they all thought we were going to get a football and cut it in half and make a bra out of it. And I was like, well, no. I took a brown bra from Victoria's Secrets and had silk ribbon made as the bands around the footballs, which was just a cup, and then laced through the cup the way football is, And I've gotten more compliments on that stupid bra, and I'm like, I should really sell these. I mean, guys love football, and they love women in bras, so I should make a football bra and sell it.
Okay.
This goes back to me knowing how to sew, and I could come up with that. Somebody else would have painted it on, but I wanted it to be still girly, so we did silk ribbon.
That's funny. Now, what is the funniest thing that's ever happened to you on Castle or a film set, and the most disastrous that you just said, oh, no, man, we got to do something. They're ready to roll. I'm starting filming.
That happened. I mean, when I first started out as a sewer, we were doing Darkman, the TV show, and the designer brought in some rayon fabric to make the coats because they're really big and flowy. And I'm like, we got to wash this first. She's like, I have no time. It's rayon. You really have to be careful with it because it shrinks. She's like, no, it'll be fine. Just make it a little extra long. So we added like 6 inches to the length of this coat, thinking that when we wash it down, it'll be fine. Well, you know how in the movies, whenever they wash a sweater, an adult sweater becomes a baby sweater, and you're like, yeah, that doesn't really happen in real life. So we finished the jackets at midnight, and the show shoots the next day at 8 in the morning, and we wash them to make them dirty. We want them to paint it up. Well, they washed them and dried them without telling me, and literally the coats that were, you know, fit a 6'4" guy were boys' coats.
Oh, my.
And we were just like, and what I've always learned is, like, you can't spend time freaking out. Spend that time doing it. So I cut another jacket and made another jacket, and we did not wash it. We spray painted it and make it dirty, and it was on set at 8 in the morning.
Oh, wow. You see, that's why it helped to learn how to sew.
You're the man.
All that Project Runway stuff, I think, is funny. It's like, aha, I could do that in a day.
But you know what's neat is you can actually do this stuff, so you know what the people that work for you have to do and what you can make
exactly.
them do and what they, you know, what you're able to ask of them.
Exactly. I know. I figured if it takes me a day, you should be able to make this in two. So don't try to play me.
So this is what I was going to ask you. How many people did you have working for you on the set of costume? Costume? Costume.
I had a costume supervisor who would break down the script and pay the bills. I had an assistant shopper, Dalia, who was fabulous and sort of knew my eye. So when I said, get me a beige dad jacket, she knew what I wanted. And then we had two full-time costumers on set. And then day help. So it was a very small department.
And you guys ran like crazy. Do you have good tennis shoes?
Yeah, exactly. And I do most of my own shopping. I'm not one of those designers that sends out 5 shoppers to bring the store to him. I want to know what's in the store because I might go out looking for a red sweater and a green pair of pants and come back with an orange dress. Because it's hard to send people out when you're trying to create a character.
Well, when you read the script, about how many weeks in advance did you get the approved script so you kind of knew what you were looking for?
The producers would give you notes, especially if it was a big costume piece. Like, you know, in episode 14, we're going to be doing, you know, 1940s. You're like, ah. But at least you knew going into it. And so, like I said, they give us a synopsis a few weeks in advance, and we would get an approved script about 8 days before we started to shoot it.
Now, Sal, they're doing episode 14 right now, and it's 1940s. Are you on the set by chance? No.
No,
exactly.
But, you know,
they're
I'm
doing
still,
the Noor episode.
I'm still very good friends with them, and apparently they told Luke that show was going to happen 2 months in advance. So he's had 2 months to build all of
right.
those 19 points.
Yes, and I was there for filming for one day, and it was very, very interesting to see them go from modern clothes, and then they'd go off to makeup and hair and come back in the old-timey stuff. Very neat to look at those old-timey suits
yeah.
on the guys.
A great experience to be able to do that with, you know, modern actors.
It's going to be a neat episode. They just braked for their 3 weeks, and they have 2 days to come back and shoot that. But talking about budgets, you kind of said something about it a little bit. In terms of budget in comparison with clothing budgets on other productions, did Castle give you a fairly good budget for your clothes, or did you really have to make miracles happen?
You know, I had an okay budget. I can't give you figures because
right, that's
you know,
fine.
Put me to death. But no, I'm also a very frugal shopper. I mean, I knew what I had to spend every episode. So if I had to spend a little over on one, I would make it up on another. Because again, we would know our episodes basically coming up. So you knew like, well, if it's an episode that takes place in 3 days, I'm not going to need as many clothes as an episode that takes place in 8 days. So you would overspend on one and under on the next one.
Right.
But it's really about being a smart shopper. I mean, it's just, you know, when you see coats going on sale and you know that Castle's going to need 3 coats for something, we'll buy them on sale because they'll come up for something. And literally, anytime I would buy clothes arbitrarily, they'd always be like, oh, we're going to shoot them. We're going to have somebody attack them. We're going to, you know, so you're like, thank God I have a set of 3 jackets.
Right. And then also you can reuse them on a different episode and change things around, style them different.
A lot of shows don't reuse clothes. Like,
oh, really?
Desperate Housewives never reuses an outfit.
What a waste.
Ever. I know, and I'm just sort of like, no, it's called a closet for a reason. I mean, that's, you know, because they literally call it, what's the actor's closet? Well, it's the character's closet. If she has a great sweater, she might wear it completely different, but why not use it again? I mean, I think that makes the show a little more believable, and I think the audience might recognize a favorite sweater or a favorite coat.
No, and that's what's so funny about Kate Beckett is she has an endless supply of fancy clothes. It's like, does she shop online in the middle of the night? The woman works day and night. She's a cop. She's got the most expensive clothes. Of course, that's unrealistic. It's TV land. But you think about the people sitting out there going, I could never afford all the things she has on her work pay.
Well, I remember from season one, there were several, a couple of Twitter people who had fashion tweets about what each character was actually wearing, what their real designer was. And I remember those, you had a couple different colors of a particular boat shirt that Beckett would wear. And I know
right.
a lot
those,
of people...
Those were the Jill Saunders t-shirts that were like $300 each.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, I want one. Well, I guess I can't afford that, you know? I
well,
remember
the irony. The irony is that Jill Saunders doesn't sell very much in the U.S., so Saks gets them... and a couple other stores, and so I went to Saks and I said, "Find me every small in the country," not ever realizing that 40 would show up.
That's funny.
And I ended up with 40, but they were in different colors, and so there was like a dozen white, six black, six red, six blue, and the white ones came in handy because I would tech them. And then there was this, an episode where they had to spill coffee, and I'm like, oh, "I got plenty of white bus."
Well, that one was that was the fifth bullet. I remember that, the episode 10 of season 2. But you know what? People went out and bought the L.L. Bean that was kind of like the boat shirts. It almost looked like the fancy one, and people were buying those because they could afford it. But we're almost to the end of the questions that I wanted to ask you before we take a couple of calls, because you've got about, according to our schedule, about 15 minutes before you have to take off. I wanted to ask you, since you just finished filming just recently William and Kate about the royal couple, what is the difference between designing for a movie such as William and Kate and a series like Castle? Is it a lot? You get a lot more time, evidently, better budget probably, but how is the, do you like filming on a movie better than a series, or you have more freedoms, or what?
I mean, they're just different animals. I mean, again, a film, you generally have more prep time, and in TV, you don't. What was interesting about William and Kate is that it was for Lifetime, and they cast those two characters, William and Kate, like 4 days before they started shooting, and they each had 72 changes. And as opposed to a film or a TV show where I can just sort of make up their look, I really wanted to stay married to what the characters really wore. Like, if you see the opening scene of William and Kate, both Prince Charles and Prince William are wearing the exact outfit, because there's so many photos of Prince William's first day on set. And to the point where when they shot the scene of the two of them walking down the hall, I'm like, no, Prince William was on the left. And the producer's like, it doesn't matter. I'm like, it matters. Because when you're doing something that's historical, well, there are more photos of William and Kate than there are of any other character, so I couldn't cheat. I mean, I really had to recreate what they wore, and that was my goal. Was like, if I'm doing this show, it's going to look real. If people see photos of them in real life and they see the film, they have to believe it's the exact same thing.
Now, I saw that film when it came out twice on Lifetime. When they showed it a few months ago before, right around the time they got married, they showed it. No, it was really good production. I really liked it. The actors were very, you know, believable, and it was a good, you know, they did a lot of it on the college campus and all that stuff,
you know. We shot that entire movie in Los Angeles.
Really? Because it looked like they were in Scotland.
Nope.
Or
nope.
It was great.
That mountain scene was in Simi Valley. The college in Scotland was at UCLA. I mean, our
very
production
believable.
Line was amazing.
It was. It was very believable. Now, to get to what you're doing now, because you're out in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, working on a film, and my last question for you before we open up the phone lines is, any current projects you're working on now that you would like to tell us about and what you're doing?
I've had a very busy year. I just finished a feature called Think Like a Man. That's for Sony. That'll be out, I think, on Easter. And it's about a group of people who read Steve Harvey's dating advice book and how they react to it. And then I'm finishing here a movie called Pitch Perfect, which is about a cappella groups competing in college. So it's been a little movie about singing, but boy, has it been busy, because on top of all of the characters we're dressing, they all perform much like Glee or The Sing-Off in matching dressed outfits. So We had 430 principal costumes and then about 500 performance clothes. It was intense.
Well, Cheryl told me that you just finished a film that had a bunch of well-known people in it. What was it, Cheryl? Movie 43 or something?
Movie 43 is a Farley's Brother movie, and it's about these two kids who are looking online for this dirty movie. And what they did is they hired 17 different directors to direct shorts. Elizabeth Banks is a very dear friend of mine, and she directed one of the shorts, and so I designed that one for her. And then about a month later, they asked her to be in one with another director, and so I designed that for her also. So Movie 43 will have about 20 costume designers, because there's the designer who did the actual film, and then there are all of those of us who did the little movies within the movie.
Yeah, there's like Richard Gere, and I mean, Cheryl is naming off tons of people are in this movie. It's just like, it's like that's entertainment like it was back in the 50s with like Judy Garland, Bing Crosby, everybody and their brothers in this movie, it sounds like. Because we were, you know, checking out your resume and we were looking at what you were doing now. And it was really interesting to see this big, you know, cast of a bunch of people that, you know.
It's literally a collaboration. Like my movie had the one with Elizabeth Banks, her and Josh Duhamel. And then the one that I designed for her was Christopher Mintz-Plasse and Chloe Moritz. So each little vignette in the movie is designed by a different team.
That is so neat. So when do you come home? Are you done now? Are you wrapping?
I'm packing up tonight and going home tomorrow.
Great. So you'll be back for Christmas in California.
Yes, just in time.
Great. Now, Cheryl, do you have any questions for Salvador?
Yes, I do. I think we could probably fit three quick ones in before the hour.
Yeah.
Okay, the first one is from Jacqueline, and Salvador, Jacqueline's from New York City. Jacqueline, you're on with Salvador.
Hi, Salvador. How are you?
Hi, Jacqueline. I'm good, honey. How are you?
Okay, I have a question. I just lost 40 pounds, and I updated my wardrobe, but, you know, on a budget. What's two staple items that would carry me from season to season that you think I should, that would, like, worth investing in, you know, as
I think everybody needs a great pair of dark jeans. Dark denim is the most flattering denim you can wear. Always get something a little bit of stretch. You can dress it up with heels, and you can make it casual with tennis shoes.
And so it's probably good. I have two little kids, so I need something comfortable to run around
after
them.
What I'm saying is that's why I believe that denim should always have stretch. The fact that anybody who buys denim without stretch to me is crazy. and likewise, in that same world, a great blazer, because again, it's the kind of thing that you can dress up and down. So if there's two pieces you want to take on vacation with you, take denim and a blazer and a camisole and T-shirt. You got dressy and casual. You're good to go.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Kate, and Kate, you're on with Salvador.
Hi, Salvador. Thanks so much for taking our questions.
No problem.
My question is, what is your favorite time period to dress in film or TV?
Oh, that's a hard one. You know, contemporary is always fun, but if I got to just sort of play in a period movie, I would love to do 20s and 30s.
Those are my favorites, too.
Yeah, the silhouettes are beautiful. You can't ever go wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And our last one we'll get in real quick is Maureen, and she's calling from Brisbane, Australia.
Oh.
Maureen.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Afternoon. Good evening. Thank you so much for doing this. I've got one question. How is it possible to work around a gorgeous castle? Trust me, I'll be very distracted.
It's very distracting, and believe me, when I had, you know, Huertas and everybody taking off their shirts to try on new ones, I would always delay it a minute before I handed them the next one.
Delay.
Yeah, no, not this shirt. Wait, let me find. Well, maybe. No, yeah.
You're funny.
I do the same probably. And, oh, by the way, you've got to.
I hope the actors aren't listening to this.
Sometimes they do.
They
Sometimes
do.
They do. And
ABC. I'm going to get trouble.
The crew listens. It's fun. They all know about Stana Talk Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Maureen.
Thank you for
thank
calling.
Thank you for taking me in.
Sure.
Yeah, is she a first-time caller from Australia? We have a
yes.
lot of Australians. We have everybody from all over the world.
Yeah, I love her Twitter name. Her Twitter name is I Ship Too Many Shows. Oh. I mean, she's a race relationshipper. You know what shippers are, right, Salvador?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah. Definitely.
Well, Salvador, were you for the couple to get together or not on the show? Were you a shipper for Beckett and Castle to finally get together when you were working, or did you want them to never get together?
You know, I was there for the first couple of seasons, so I loved the sort of cat and mouse. And the cat and mouse.
They're still doing that.
I think that if they were to get together, it's marriage material for Castle, and I don't think Beckett. I think Beckett would be bored after a while, so I think they need to play cat and mouse for a while. See,
well,
that way they settle down.
She's for it, and he's against it. Actor-wise, you know, Donna's four of the characters together, and so are most of the fans. And Nathan's and his character are against it. I don't think they'll get them married on the series. I think they'll get them to dating, you know.
Yeah, but wouldn't that be a great wedding to design? Oh, my God.
Oh, man, you'd have a blast on that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
That's,
you know,
cool, exactly. Stana in a wedding dress. Woohoo.
You have worked with some very famous people. I was looking at the list of actors in the movie 43 for next year.
I was just telling about that, yeah.
I was like, wow. I'm sorry. I'm
but
probably
that,
fine.
Like I said, that film, there were several designers. We all had little vignettes in it.
She was in the room talking to the callers and missed where he said there was like 20 directors, 17 designers, and little movies within a movie.
Who did you get to dress?
Elizabeth Banks and Josh Duhamel and Chloe Moritz and Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Wow.
And Josh was on Vegas, and he did All My Children for many years in Vegas, the show.
Nested in the Transformer movies.
Yeah. So, and we've got about 5 minutes left. Is there anything you'd like to say to the fans around the world about working on Castle or any productions you're doing, what you're going to be doing in the future? You know, what you're going to be doing pretty soon? Or are you going to take some time off? And
you know, I've had a great run. I mean, since I started Castle 4 years ago, I really haven't had a break. So this one of the reasons I moved on from Castle was because it is 10 to 11 months of nonstop work, and being able to go back to films, they have ebbs and flows, so you get a little more time off. So as much as, you know, Castle was family. Everybody there was just, it was such a great place to be. Andrew Marlowe, Rob Bowman, Laurie Zaks, they were family, and having to tell them I was moving on was absolutely heartbreaking. And even telling the actors, it was sort of like, you know, you went with hat in hand, like, you know I love you and I support you, but I've got to go. And they sort of understood. I mean, they knew that they knew the hours that I put in to make their characters look the way they did. So they were very forgiving. I spoiled Nathan and Stana, so they were a little heartbroken that I wasn't going to be there, but I think I left them in good hands. It was a great experience. It's TV, even though we work on it for a little while, now it lasts forever. So, you know, I love that they're still part of what the characters that I designed are still out there, and they've morphed and they've changed. But, you know, I was there for the inception.
Now, did you ever watch the show, or did you even have time? And do you ever catch an episode now and then to see what's going on with the storylines, or you just don't have time?
I still watch the show. Absolutely. No, I mean, because normally Monday night is the one that you're hopefully home early. And so if I'm not home by 10 on a Monday, I'm really dead.
That's
so it's
great.
Hopefully my Monday night viewing.
And do you get to keep in touch with a lot of the cast or crew, or do you just hear from them from time to time now since everybody moved on?
I'll get a text every now and then. The makeup artist, Debbie Zoller, is a very dear friend of mine. So when she was still on there, we would, you know, the actors, she'd be on the phone to me and they'd say hello. And it's family. And so you don't just walk away from that. You know, I still, you know, Facebook with the producers on the show. We're still friends.
That's good. And they can always, in the future, you find shows that they're doing and you can get jobs on them when they go on to something else post-Castle. I noticed that you worked on Moonlight with Alfred Soul.
Yeah.
And Veronica Mars. So there were people that went back and forth that you met up with on other shows and followed each other over to Castle and stuff. So for in the future, are you planning any other movies scheduled? Are you taking time off for a while and just going to relax for the holidays?
I'm taking a little time off. My agent called me. As like, we finished shooting this show on Friday and Thursday. My agent called. She's like, are you ready for interviews? And I'm like, no. not till after January. Then I'll take interviews.
We're very lucky. We got ours. We've been looking for you for so darn long. Finally found you. So we appreciate
you. This has been fun. I'm glad you guys found me.
Thank you for coming on, and we enjoyed having you, and we hope that you have a wonderful future, and we just love the close on Castle, that season 1 and 2, and I will be getting in touch with you soon when you get back home to give you the link in case you would like the interview.
I would love that.
Touch base and stuff, and thank you privately.